A brief book summary from Books at a Glance by Benjamin J. Montoya. About the authors. Milton Friedman, living from 1912 to 2006, economist and former presidential advisor, was the author of a number of books, including Capitalism and Freedom and Tyranny of the Status Quo, also written with his wife, Rose Friedman, who lived from 1910 through 2009. Introduction. Free to Choose is about the relationship between personal freedom and economic freedom. Although Friedman covered this same topic in Capitalism and Freedom, Free to Choose is intended to provide a more concrete approach. Summary, Chapter 1. The Power of the Market. The market is a powerful thing that affects us all in so many ways. First, it helps us to understand the relationship of personal freedom and economic freedom. When we compare free markets to government-controlled markets, we see that very thing. Second, the market is shown to be powerful because of the importance of pricing. Prices have three functions. First, they transmit information. Second, they provide incentive to adopt those methods of production that are least costly and thereby use available resources for the most highly valued purposes. Third, they determine who gets how much of the product or the distribution of the income. Third, the market in the United States was meant to be free with little governmental involvement. Adam Smith has laid out a philosophy of the government's involvement as an umpire instead of as a participant. The difference lies in the umpire sets the rules for fair play, whereas the participant or player is actively involved in the game. There are all kinds of problems with the government becoming an active part of the market, not the least of which are that once the government gets involved, they rarely get out of the game, so to speak. They stay involved. Fourth, the larger problem is governmental involvement in the market is that it encroaches upon our individual freedom to make free transactions with whomever we like. That is the basis for personal and economic freedom. The exchange must be voluntary and such that both parties believe they benefit from the exchange in some way. That is the underlying insight of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. Chapter 2. The Tyranny of Controls. Being free to choose in economic transactions is a major component of personal freedom. The problem we face today is that the government, in the U.S. and elsewhere, has gotten so involved in the economy that we are living under the tyranny of controls. For example, the government has gotten involved in international trade, claiming that it is of their interest to do so using tariffs and the like. The problem is that their involvement in this way and others reduces the voluntary nature of the transaction. People ought to be free to buy from whoever they want in a voluntary way. That freedom also ensures that monopolies do not form, because then American companies have to compete with the companies of the world. One way that we see the tyranny of the government's controls in our economy is in how we get to spend our income and how we earn it. Many of us are taxed heavily, sometimes even 40%. Although we get to use a portion of our income how we like, much of it is controlled by the government because they are so deeply involved in the economy. We are not even free to do what we want, given the restrictions the government puts on so many occupations. As Friedman puts it, open quote, "Today you are not free to offer your services as a lawyer, a physician, a dentist, a plumber, a barber, a mortician, or engage in a host of other occupations without first getting a permit or license from a government official. You are not free to work overtime at terms mutually agreeable to you and your employer, unless the terms conform to rules and regulations laid down by a government official." Chapter 3. The Anatomy of Crisis. We have probably all heard of the Great Depression. It has left an unforgettable mark on U.S. economic history, such that it is covered in American history textbooks today. But what is often not noted is the source of the crisis. The source of the crisis is well known today. The government's involvement in the banking industry through the creation of the Federal Reserve System. Few people understood this point then, but now this is considered to be historic fact. The problem with the crisis is that before the government got involved, there were problems with the standard of gold as the standard for currency and with people all going at once to withdraw their money from the banks. There are problems with both issues. The problem with the latter is that the banks use deposited money for loans and to earn interest on those loans. The issue with currency being based on the gold standard is that the Federal Reserve System did not use that standard appropriately. Had they followed the rules of the gold standard, they would have increased the quantity of money as their increase of gold happened. But the Federal Reserve System did not follow this approach, and that is part of what fueled the crisis of the Great Depression. Friedman wisely notes, open quote, "In one respect, the system has remained completely consistent throughout. It blames all problems on external influences beyond its control and takes credit for any and all favorable occurrences. It thereby continues to promote the myth that the private economy is unstable, while its behavior continues to document the reality that government is today the major source of economic instability." Chapter 4, Cradle to Grave. The last chapter noted how, as the government became more involved in the economy, the worse things became. That lesson can be repeated throughout history, even more recent history. So, one might think that instead of becoming more involved, that the government would take stock of their negative impact and potentially back off. That sounds reasonable, right? Instead, the government has become even more involved than ever before, and their involvement only seems to be increasing. The result of the government's increased involvement are programs like Social Security, the welfare state we see now, government housing, forms of health care for all, close to socialized health care, and assistance with education. The problem we see with each of these areas is that the more the government gets involved, the worse things have become. The more that the government gets involved in healthcare, the worse it becomes for doctors, nurses, and, well, patients. What can be done to fix these issues? Well, there are at least six suggestions. First, repeal immediately the payroll tax. Second, continue to pay all existing beneficiaries under Social Security's the amounts that they are entitled to under current law. Third, give every worker who has already earned coverage a claim to those retirement, disability, and survivor's benefits that his tax payments and earnings to date would entitle him to under current law, reduced by the present value of the reduction in his future taxes as a result of the repeal of the payroll tax. Fourth, give every worker who has not yet earned coverage a capital sum, again in the form of bonds, equal to the accumulated value of the taxes that he or his employer has paid on his behalf. Fifth, terminate any further accumulation of benefits, allowing individuals to provide for their own retirement as they wish. Sixth, finance payment under items 2, 3, and 4 out of general tax funds plus the issuance of government bonds. Friedman strikes at the underlying problems as follows, open quote, "The waste is distressing, but it is the least of the evils of the paternalistic programs that have grown to such massive size. Their major evil is their effect on the fabric of our society. They weaken the family, reduce the incentive to work, save, and innovate, reduce the accumulation of capital, and limit our freedom. These are the fundamental standards by which they should be judged." Close quote. Chapter 5, Created Equal. Our country was founded on the idea that all men or people were created equal by God. That precise terminology was used, but what exactly does it mean? Historically, created equal meant equal opportunity to shape one's life. That is, there are to be no restrictions on someone's pursuit of happiness in their career and other areas. They are to experience true freedom. There is, however, now a very different understanding of created equal that has become known as equality in outcome. This position and understanding of created equal finds its roots in Marxism and is thus an idea that can be found in communist countries. As Dodo said in Alice in Wonderland, open quote, "Everybody has won and all must have prizes," close quote. So also when it comes to this understanding of equal outcome, they want everyone to experience the prizes or else it is not considered to be fair. Friedman makes an important observation regarding this fairly new understanding of created equal that has arisen in the U.S. that is worth including here. Open quote. "It is striking testimony to the changing meaning of words that in recent decades the Democratic Party of the United States has been the chief instrument for strengthening that government power which Jefferson and many of his contemporaries viewed as the greatest threat to democracy, and it has striven to increase government power in the name of a concept of equality that is almost the opposite of the concept of equality that Jefferson identified with liberty and that Tocqueville with democracy, close quote. This idea of equal outcomes removes our freedom to choose, despite it coming from within the U.S., especially from within a party that claims to support democracy so strongly. Chapter 6. What's wrong with our schools? It has become commonplace for parents, students, and teachers to be upset with the public school system. Sure, there are exceptions. There are good public schools in which many people are happy. But given the state of the public school setup, it breeds more problems than anything else. Why is that? The reason is simple and is in line with other issues raised throughout this book. The problem with our public school system is the lack of freedom to choose due to the government's takeover of the public school system. Because it is required by law for everyone to go to school through high school, and because the government has taken this over as another project, we see the same kinds of negative outcomes that we see elsewhere when the government takes over. We lose our freedom to choose. That is the underlying problem why so many people are unhappy with the quality of the school system that they have to deal with. There is literally no other option. What, then, is the solution to this larger problem? Bringing back people's freedom to choose through a voucher system would allow for people to choose which school their children would attend and would create competition among public and private schools. When we have the freedom to choose with our taxpayer dollars and there are other options available, then this gives us the kind of personal, economic, and educational freedom to have more of a say in the education of our children. The system would also be best for higher education. But when it comes to higher education, the students themselves should either pay for it during their course of study or be expected to pay for it after they gain employment, with the expectation that their course of study will enable them to earn more money. Chapter 7. Who protects the consumer? In our discussion of economics, we must remember and consider the consumer, that is, the one who buys. Who bothers to protect the consumer? Well, in the United States, the government has taken several measures to protect the consumer. These measures involve the intervention of certain governmental agencies, such as the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. The government has used this agency and others like it in an effort to protect the consumer. Question: have their efforts actually been successful? The answer has to be no. Although the government has tried to protect the consumer by getting more involved in the economy, we have to learn from history once again. The more the government gets involved in anything, the worse the economy gets. For example, the government's involvement in the transportation industry, especially for the transportations of goods, resulted in restricting the business that could have otherwise flourished. What, then, is the alternative? If the government backed off from their current high level of involvement, who would protect the consumer in so many ways? The answer is astoundingly simple. The market would protect the consumer through competition. If sellers were forced to compete more with one another instead of focusing on their compliance to the government's regulatory standards, sellers would have to ensure that their product is the best to avoid losing sales. Do you see the difference? It is one from going to focusing on compliance to focusing on the consumer, such that all these industries would be forced to become more consumer-oriented. Now, if the government has information that a certain product is harmful, they ought to share that with the public. But the less the government becomes involved in the market, the more the market will correct these problems anyways. Chapter 8. Who protects the worker? When we think of a question like who protects the worker, we are probably tempted to think of two answers. First, labor unions come to mind. Second, the government itself has created laws to protect workers. There are important problems with both because they restrict the market to exercise itself freely. One of the larger problems with labor unions is that they have been known to conclude with the employers themselves, which is illegal. Plus, they do not allow the market to be free to create competition, especially in the case of medical doctors. As for the government's involvement, although some of their involvement has been helpful, like setting a minimum wage and forbidding children from working from a young age, these are issues that a free market would and could correct. The problem is that with the government getting involved, there is no chance of competition. The problem with the government involvement only heightens when it comes to civil servants of the government. They are so protected by the government that it becomes nearly impossible to fire people, even people who show up to work late consistently. That is because once the government gets involved in this way, the lack of competition has its negative effects. Friedman makes an important observation that touches on this chapter as well as the entire book. Open quote. The role of competition is a feature of the free market that we have encountered time and again. A worker is protected from his employer by the existence of other employers for whom he can go to work. An employer is protected from exploitation by his employees by the existence of other workers whom he can hire. The consumer is protected from exploitation by a given seller by the existence of other sellers from whom he can buy. Why do we have poor postal service, poor long-distance train service, poor schools? Because in each case, there is essentially only one place we can get the service. Close quote. If we desire improvement in each of these areas covered in this book, then we must desire a free market with little involvement from the government, only as an umpire, not a participant. Chapter 9, The Cure for Inflation. Inflation is a problem for every country of every kind of economic system, whether it is more capitalistic or socialistic. Inflation is also a problem that can be a downfall for a country. Examples of this abound, especially in socialistic countries, wherein leaders have just decided to print more money without economic justification. There are at least five important truths to keep in mind for inflation. First, inflation is a monetary phenomenon, arising from a more rapid increase in the quantity of money than in output. Second, governments determine the quantity of money. Third, there is only one cure for inflation, a slower rate of increase in the quantity of money. Fourth, it takes time, measured in years, not months, for inflation to develop. It thus also takes time for inflation to be cured. Fifth, unpleasant side effects of the cure are unavoidable. Inflation in the U.S. has increased dramatically in the last 20 years, making it more difficult for the government to stop it. But, just as it goes with an alcoholic, the only cure is to stop drinking. The cure for the government would be to decrease its production of money, and thus remove the reasons for the increase. Part of the reason why inflation exists is due to the rapid growth in government spending. The government's full employment policy, and a mistaken policy pursued by the Federal Reserve System that uses government bonds to increase their revenue. The overall solution would require time to fix, just like it usually takes alcoholics time to stop drinking. But if we are convinced that inflation is truly a problem, as economics and its history shows, then we must seek to cut this bad habit out at its source. Chapter 10, The Tide is Turning. Historically speaking, the tide is turning in the favor of a freer market, even because the U.S. became into existence. People are beginning to see more and more of the problematic nature of the government's involvement in the market in the aforementioned ways. But, to end this book and its summary, of course, how can we fix these ongoing issues? One way to do it would be to create an economic bill of rights that limit what the government can do in a bundle fashion. Another approach could be to elect leaders who think like us, but that would not work as quickly as the introduction of an economic bill of rights. Such rights could include the following, at least as a start. Congress shall not lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports, except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws. Congress shall make no laws abridging the freedom of sellers of goods or labor to price their products or services. No state shall make or impose any law which shall abridge the right of any citizen of the United States to follow any occupation or profession of his choice. The right of people to buy and sell legitimate goods and services at mutually acceptable terms shall not be infringed by Congress or any of the states. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes of persons from whatever sources derived without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration, provided that the same tax rate is applied to all income in excess of occupational and business expenses and a personal allowance of a fixed amount. The word person shall exclude any corporations and other artificial persons. Congress shall have the power to authorize non-interest-bearing obligations of the government in the form of currency or book entries, provided that the total dollar amount outstanding increases by no more than 5% per year and no less than 3%. All contracts between the U.S. government and other parties stated in dollars and all dollar sums contained in federal laws shall be adjusted annually to allow for the change in the general level of prices during the prior year. This list is not intended to be exhaustive, but it does highlight the kinds of things that would go well into such an economic bill of rights to ensure a free market, or, as the title of the book gets at, they would be free to choose.